What does it mean to be a Christian woman in our feminized secular society? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is Ladylike, Living Biblically. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Ladylike, Living Biblically by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. A Voice for Lutheran Women, Ladylike, Living Biblically, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May. As a movement in the United States has only been around about 100 years. When it first started out, feminism was not. It was most decidedly not what feminism is today. In fact, in a lot of ways, the definition of the term has almost been turned completely on its head. So, what are the challenges of today's feminism, and how do we make the case against it? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Memorial Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to begin today's program listening to Suzanne Vinker's presentation at the first Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Making the Secular Case Against Feminism. Then we'll continue our series with Pastor Paul McCain on Luther's Large Catechism. Today, the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Suzanne Vinker is the married mother of two children in St. Louis. She has been a guest on numerous radio and television programs, including The View, Fox and Friends, and The Laura Ingraham Show. And she's author of the books Seven Myths of Working Mothers, How to Choose a Husband and Make Peace Within a Marriage, and The Flip Side of Feminism. Let's listen to her lecture at the 2013 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Thank you, Todd. This is okay? You can hear me? Okay. I love being here with Todd and Jeff, who I think were one of my first radio interviews with my first book back in 2004. And they think I've risen up in the media world, but I have to say, I think that my experiences with you have far surpassed the ones I've had afterwards, for a lot of reasons. Just really enjoyable. And I remember the time that I got on the air for my first book, which was the most time I've ever had, which is so great because it allows me to really delve into this issue, which I shouldn't really call this issue, these issues. You know, feminism encompasses so many topics, and important topics, heavy topics, that I have recently discovered that trying to talk about them in a 5-minute soundbite on television is really unsatisfying. I'm just not enjoying that. I really enjoy this much more, and so I'm thrilled to be here. So thank you, Todd and Jeff. Where to begin here? I think feminism is an extremely complicated topic that has become very subjective. One of the things that I've noticed in speaking about the issue is no matter what I say or how I define it, I get people who say in response, well, that's not my version of feminism at all. That's not how I think of it. Not necessarily discounting the definition I gave, but just really honing in on how, for everybody, it's something different. And of course, people are entitled to define it any way they like, but the reality is there is a mission, there is an agenda there that has been going on for some 40 years now, and it's very much alive today as it was then. And some of the names, I'm going to throw out a few names of people, women, who sort of are part of this whole movement. And, of course, there's many, many, many more, hundreds. But these might be familiar to you. The most recent is Sheryl Sandberg. Does everybody know who that is? She's the COO of Facebook. And she has been all over the news as of late with her book Lean In, which encourages women to basically put their careers at the front and center of their lives in order to make it to the corner office like she has, if you will. She runs a multi-billion-dollar company and does not in any way represent the average woman in America, but at any rate, she's trying to help people get where she is. So she's a feminist, very strong feminist, and good friends with Gloria Steinem, and of course you all know that name very well. And then there's women like Eve Ensler, who is associated with the Vagina Monologues. Does anybody remember the Vagina Monologues? And then a name you probably aren't so familiar with is Jessica Valenti, and she's heads up the third wave feminist movement. She's young, in her 30s. So women like these women that I've just named have a goal. They call it gender equality, which of course is a very benign and actually for many people positive phrase, because who wouldn't agree in equality? But their version of equality is very different from what you and I might think of equality. What these folks are looking for is 50-50 representation of males and females in every social arena. So, for example, what they want to see is at least 50% of men at home with babies doing the work of the nurturing, the cooking, the babies, and all of that, and 50% of women in the not just in the workforce, but running the world at the very, 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 very top. They will never be happy or satisfied until there is that equal representation, which we, I'm convinced, are hundreds of years away from. So if they ever get there, that's they'll be dead before it happens. That's why they're always saying their work is never done. So that's one aspect of feminism. That's actually an easier one to name because you can just sort of put your finger on it. Here they are, and here's what they want. And most people will say, that's not for me. I'm not interested in that. But the other part of feminism is much more about what you and I run into, often without even naming it a feminist issue. And that is, I call it the everyday. So there's the political side of feminism, and then there's the everyday. And by the everyday, I'm referring to those issues that have become very mainstream and absorbed into our culture, such as abortion, daycare, working motherhood, single moms, the enormous rise in cohabitation, and, of course, decline in marriage and the decline in the traditional family over the last 40 years. These are all issues that stem from feminism, but we don't label it as such, but they're the things that we are dealing with, you know, all the time, and that certainly the media covers on a very regular basis. In fact, the issues of marriage, I don't know if you've all noticed this, but marriage, motherhood, work, family, all that stuff has been in the media in a huge way in the last year. I'm going to come back to an article from last summer in a little while that has to do with that. So when we're talking about those issues that are more everyday, the ones that I just named, the problem with it is that any intellectual debate on these issues is completely stifled. I'm going to read them off again. Abortion, daycare, absentee parenting, working moms, single moms, rise in cohabitation, decline in marriage. If you are not on board with thinking that those things are good things, positive things, moving forward, part of what feminists call progress, then you, of course, are a throwback or a misogynist or want to take us back to the 1950s. And, of course, that's the biggest thing I get. No matter how I phrase it, no matter how I couch my article, I will describe it so specifically, this is not what I'm saying, and here's what I am saying, and then at the end, they'll just scream out, you just want women barefoot and pregnant. And that is why we don't get anywhere when it comes to these issues. About 3 weeks ago, the Pew Research Center came out with finding on breadwinner moms. Did everybody catch that? That was all over the news. 40%, this is what the finding was, a record 40%, or working mothers, excuse me, are the primary breadwinners in a record 40% of American households with children. That's up from 11% in 1960. Now let's think about that for a minute. From 11% to 40% of moms who are either the primary or sole breadwinners. And it's extremely important to note that of that 40%, the vast majority are single moms, thus showing the decline of, obviously, the family. That's not a good thing. That's not something that you cheer on, in my opinion anyway, I think in most people's opinion. A small percentage, the other So the majority are single moms. The other is a minority of married moms, highly educated, and are the breadwinners in their family. So it's actually a very small group when you're comparing, you know, when you're looking at overall, when you use the phrase working moms. But at any rate, so when a study like that comes out, we should be able to talk about what that means for us. You know, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Let's talk about it. What's the fallout? I don't know if any of you caught the clip regarding that breadwinner issue a couple weeks ago with Megyn Kelly on Fox News, where she was flanked by Lou Dobbs and Eric Erickson. And I hate to say anything negative about Megyn Kelly because I write for Fox News, but Megyn Kelly butchered that interview, in my opinion, because these men wanted to come on to talk about this breadwinner moms study, this finding, and all of those intricate details that are off limits or taboo. And she just railroaded them and showed her bias the entire 11 minutes on the entire 11-minute clip. That, again, is why we don't get anywhere. Because God forbid you even talk about the fallout of such a major sociological shift in this country. It's huge, and we have to be able to. Stifled. The assumption is that all progress for women is good. And by progress, that means out of the home, into the workforce. This new world that we've created was supposed to make women happy, right? Because 50 years ago, everybody knows that women were oppressed, miserable, kept in their homes in cages, wanted something different than they had, and feminism came along to free them. And they showed them there was another way. You don't need to be bothering with wiping noses and having babies and, you know, cooking and all of those things. You're going to have this better life over here. So that's what they presented. And 40 years later, here's what we have. According to a 2007 report, this was the basis, by the way, for Flipside, the book that Todd was referring to two books back, Flipside of Feminism. According to a 2007 report from the National Bureau of Economic Research, quote, as women have gained more freedom, more education, and more power, they have become less happy. So what happened? That's kind of a big deal. That really defies the whole argument that feminism has saved women of the last 40 years and given them something that they didn't have before. And now they're all happy. It's not working out that way. Why?
When we come back on this Monday afternoon, May the 25th, we'll continue listening to Suzanne Venker's lecture at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference back in 2013. She's making the secular case against feminism, and she'll answer the question why women aren't happier under feminism today.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
What does it mean to be a Christian woman in our feminized secular society? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is Ladylike, Living Biblically. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Ladylike, Living Biblically by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. A Voice for Lutheran Women, Ladylike, Living Biblically, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're playing a 2013 presentation by Suzanne Venker at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference titled Making the Secular Case Against Feminism. Before the break, she asked the question, why aren't women happier under feminism? Here's her response.
My argument is that the reason is because the premise of feminism is hopelessly flawed. The promises that it made didn't pan out. I'm going to read, if I may, something, a few pages of Flipside, to explain feminism in a very simple form. There are three overarching tenets of feminism that have become infused in our society. Feminists are imprisoned, this is number one, feminists are imprisoned by their negative view of women and their place in the world around them. That's number one, that's the first tenet. This view was best expressed in an advertisement by the National Organization of Women that was run in many magazines and newspapers during the 1970s. It showed a darling, curly-headed girl over the caption, "This normal, healthy baby has a handicap. She was born female." This is the basic chip-on-the-shoulder tenet of feminism that says someone, it's not clear who, perhaps a god, perhaps the establishment, perhaps a conspiracy of male chauvinist pigs, dealt women a foul blow by making them female. Thus, women must hurl demands on society in order to wrest from a male-dominated social structure the status that has been wrongfully denied to women throughout the centuries. Feminists achieve this goal by generating conflicts in legislatures, in courts, in schools, in universities, and in the workplace, which we are still dealing with today. And so when you go back to the political end that I started with, political aspect or side to feminism, that's what those folks are busy doing, what I just said. While we're living our regular lives, working, raising families and whatnot, they're out doing that. The second tenet of feminism is that, and this is a little bit of hyperbole, but that's okay, you can handle it. Of all the injustices perpetuated on women through the centuries, the most oppressive is that women have babies and men do not. The abolition of this inequality is the primary goal. That is why feminists are compulsively driven to make abortion and daycare universally available to all women and taxpayer-funded. To achieve equality with men, women must control the numbers of babies they have, well, obviously, and outsource, through nannies and daycare, the care of the babies they do have. Eliminate the babies, and the equality goal will be achieved. Obviously, they're not going to phrase it that way. Nobody talks that way. But it doesn't matter because it's very obvious, isn't it? I mean, why is that equality version that they want, that 50-50 representation that I'm talking about, why doesn't it exist? There's only one reason. Babies. Children. If there were no babies and children, you'd have a completely different kind of workforce. We wouldn't have any people in the world, but, you know. Let's see. The third tenet of feminism is that there is no difference between males and females other than their sex organs. This is really important. This is probably the biggest. There's no differences between the sexes. That's what they believe. All those physical, cognitive, and emotional differences you think exist are merely social constructs, the result of centuries of restraints and stereotypes imposed by a male-dominated society. That is why feminists have become defensive when new research is published that proves innate differences between men and women. It's also why they try to stop grants to scholars who might uncover evidence of differences, and that is true. Jay Belsky is one one person who comes to mind who has run the longest longitudinal study of daycare to date, and he had to fight feminists to just release the findings. Forget about discussing them. Just put them out there. Same thing with Luann Brissendine, who I'm going to mention in a minute. She's written The Female Brain and the Male Brain, which are excellent books, and I highly recommend them. And she had to run up against the same thing. Feminists get upset at any argument that shows men and women are not interchangeable. That's what they want. Whatever a man can do, a woman can do just as well, and vice versa. And not only can they want to, because they're the same, really. It's just society that told them they're not the same. For example, in an interview of several years ago, Gloria Steinem was asked about her thoughts on the latest research on male and female brains, which shows a clear and undeniable distinction between males and females. Her response? Well, you know, every time there's a step forward, there's a backlash. So now we're seeing another backlash about brains, brain differences, gender differences centered in the brain. Even if they're right, it doesn't have to continue to be so. What makes human beings the species that has survived all this time is our adaptability. When the interviewer pressed further and asked, but aren't there inherent differences we can't ignore? Steinem replied, well, society can certainly intervene at a cultural level to change that behavior. In her 2010 book, The Male Brain, Dr. Luann Brissendine explains the latest research that shows how the male brain differs from the female brain. Quote, the behavioral influences of male and female hormones on the brain are major. My son didn't turn Barbie into a sword because his environment promoted the use of weapons. He was practicing the instincts of his male brain to aggressively protect and defend. And you're laughing because you guys have boys and girls like I do. And you know full well you never handed him a gun and you never handed her a doll, and that those were natural things that they did. Which, by the way, is not to say that 100% of people do that. And that's part of the issue, is that if you're not even allowed to generalize, because then you're leaving somebody out. Consider the sexual differences between men and women. How many young men do you know who would be offended if a woman told him she'd like to use his body for sex? Now turn that around. If a man told a woman he'd like to use her body for sex, it would be grounds for sexual harassment. Apples and oranges. Gender differences are the most natural thing in the world, and smart Americans embrace them rather than fight them. Accepting that men and women are different does not mean women can't be doctors or engineers, or that men can't be full-time dads, nor does it mean that all men and all women have identical sex drives. It just means that more men than women may like engineering. More women than men may want to stay home with the kids, and more men than women may have, and do have, a stronger sex drive. That women want to raise their own children rather than outsource this work to hired help is feminists' main bone of contention. Feminists don't want women to want to be with their children because that messes up their plans to change society. The more you want to be home, the less equality they're going to have. That, going back to that 50-50, getting rid of the children, the babies, solves the problem. If you want to stay home with them, well, you're screwing up their whole plan. In 1976, the French feminist icon Simone de Beauvoir, I don't know if I'm saying that right, was so bold as to say that no woman, quote, should be authorized to stay home with her children. Women should not have that choice, because if there is such a choice, too many women will make that one. Don't think this mindset no longer exists. Just a few years ago, Linda Hirschman, retired professor of philosophy and women's studies at Brandeis University, said, I think it's a mistake for these highly educated and capable women to make that choice to stay home. An educated, competent adult's place is in the office. Okay, so I don't know about you, but I think that reeks of elitism and shows unquestionably where the values of the feminist mindset is. You know, it's all about accolades, a paycheck, proving oneself important in the outside world. They feel that their intellect is so superior that the world would just be denied their intellect if they don't go out there and do it. you know, full-time all the time as far as they can go. And so if they're bothering themselves with taking care of babies, that gets in the way. That's keeps them from achieving their goal. So I want to go back now to that second tenet about babies and children being sort of an intrusion, if you will, and how women over the last several decades have been encouraged to focus exclusively on their careers at the expense of marriage and motherhood, because I think that is certainly the hottest topic in the media, and it certainly hasn't gone away in the last 2 years. We've just heard so much about it. And what it really stems from is a serious devaluing of family. That's just the bottom line. It used to be, and this, you know, this goes back to that whole idea of when you talk like this, you're suggesting women, or all of us, go back. It's not about going back. You can't go back, but you can look back and say, what did we maybe do better then? Is it possible that we did something better before today? Or is everything we do always a positive thing just because it's progress? That's not the case, of course, and that's why we can't get anywhere, because the minute you speak of it, you're marginalized. But we used to put family at the center, and that's why there were a lot of reasons moms were home with the kids at that point, actually, but that was certainly part of it, that we valued that, we got it. Family came first, and everything sort of circled around that. Even for men, husbands were making money and just doing a job to make an investment into the family. That is where the heart was. That is where the value was. That's where the identity for men and women came from. Their families, their relationships, not their job. But what we've done is not only flip that, but put so much insane power in a job. And I'm not anti-job, obviously. I'm not anti-work outside the home, obviously. But perspective. I mean, really, I think that's what's missing is perspective. Those are fine things. They're good things. But they're not the whole enchilada. They're not where you're supposed to get your identity. If, you know, if your job isn't there tomorrow, what are you going to do? Are you going to shrivel up and die because your identity's gone? Or are you going to find something else to do? You're going to shift course. But if your family goes away tomorrow, that's a problem. Unfortunately, that's what feminism has done. It has taught women to tie their self-worth and their identities to their jobs.
Suzanne Venker is a married mother of two children in St. Louis. She's been a guest on numerous radio and television programs, including The View, Fox and Friends, and The Laura Ingraham Show. She's author of the book, Seven Myths of Working Mothers, How to Choose a Husband and Make Peace with Marriage, and The Flip Side of Feminism. This is her presentation at the first Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I mean, all these really hot button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We're listening to Suzanne Venker make the secular case against feminism from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, the very first one in 2013. Now, before the break, she was talking about how feminism taught women to derive their self-worth and their identity from their jobs. Here's an example.
I'm going to read to you an email that I received the other day from, I'm calling her Maggie, that's not her name. Dear Suzanne, my husband and I got married and had our first baby when we were very young. We now have two children and live far away from our hometown. My husband is in the military, and everyone I know, from the wives here to my friends from home, all have jobs or are going to school while their babies are still so young. In my heart, I know that these years are fleeting. Therefore, I want to invest in them all that I have. On the other hand, I feel worthless because I don't have a real job. It's a horrible, horrible feeling that I constantly struggle with on a daily basis. The feeling that in our society and to everyone around me, I am worthless. That what I'm doing is pointless. That would never have been said 40 years ago. Never. That's decades of removing the worth and the value of family and children from the top rung of the ladder to the bottom, to the point where you've browbeaten people to that they don't even want to do it because, you know, people like to feel that other people think what they're doing is worthwhile. It's very hard to keep going when you don't have, and especially with that work, because you really don't get a lot of, especially in the early years, accolades. You certainly don't get a paycheck or anything like that. So it's important to have people around you be supportive of that very important job. So this Maggie and women like her, who I hear from all the time, don't just have to deal with their friends and family. They also have to turn on the television occasionally and hear junk like this, just to drill it in their poor little heads, since they feel like they're the only ones in the world at home among their friends. In May 2009, Larry King spent an hour on the subject of women and self-worth. By the way, a whole hour on the Larry King Show, trust me, I think the most I've ever gotten is 6 minutes on air. Airtime is huge in television. Just by nature of putting an hour on the topic sends a message to the viewer that this is really important. Have you ever watched, you're watching the news and they're covering something really big, and after 6 minutes they've gone on to something else, and you're like, wait, what? You barely said anything. We need to talk about this. That's the business of airtime and how costly it is. So I just thought it was really funny that a full hour was spent on this. His guests were naturally five feminists, because we wouldn't have any non-feminist on there. Actress Della Reese, journalist Lisa Ling, author Lisa Nichols, Martha Stewart, and psychologist Cheryl Saban, who had just written the book called What Is Your Self-Worth? A Woman's Guide to Validation. Now I'm thinking of Maggie here when I read this. Larry King opened the program by asking the panel, how does a woman get self-confident? Della Reese responded, I suggest you get financially independent because that gives you freedom and empowerment to love yourself first. But haven't things improved with women's rights? Asked King. We still need to be defined by a man. Lisa Ling responded, we need to become independent. Okay, so independent is the key term there. That's what they're ultimately looking for is independence for women, which, by the way, being independent is a great trait. It's important that everybody, male or female, in my opinion, is capable of doing things as best they can on their own, that they can take care of themselves, and that they're independent-minded and they think for themselves. These are all good things. But this is a different kind of independence. This is an independence that essentially says, I don't need men. I don't need anybody but myself. And there's no way a relationship, or certainly a marriage, is going to work with that attitude, because it is a mutual dependence. And that's okay. That's a positive thing. But they don't see it that way. Independence, especially financial, but just across the board, is the goal. And that leads into the biggest topic of all that's feminist-related, which, of course, is this notion of having it all, which we have heard ad nauseum, certainly over the years, but especially in the last, I think, year and a half. Did any of you read or get wind of the article in The Atlantic last summer by Anne Marie Slaughter that was called Why Women Still Can't Have It All? It was all over the news. I mean, it was huge, and they covered it on just everywhere. The point of that article, the reason why it made such a big stink, I think, it certainly went viral, and it was, I think, one of The Atlantic's biggest pieces ever. Anne Marie Slaughter is a tenured professor at Princeton. She lives there with her husband and two sons, and she had an opportunity to leave that position and go work with Hillary Clinton. Big job. So she took it, and she went to D.C. and lived there for 2 years. And she was, by the way, a strident feminist and, you know, believed in the having it all concept. So she lives there Monday through Friday. Her husband and sons live in New Jersey. And after 2 years, it dawns on her that my teenage sons need their mom. Took her 2 years to figure that out. So she quits, and she goes back to her tenured position and sleeps at home with her family, like people do. And in this huge article, it was as if she had this epiphany. And she actually stated that the feminist beliefs that she had based her entire life on were faulty. And I'm paraphrasing. Were shifting under her feet, I think is what she wrote. It was actually fantastic. I was thrilled with the message. But the rest of the article was bad and just sort of suggested, she really didn't have an epiphany. I actually wrote a response to this and said, Ms. Slaughter still doesn't get it. Because even though she came home and gave up this job or switched back, she still thought that it was perfectly possible for women to have it all if, you know, men and government employers just stepped up to the plate and made it happen kind of thing. So it's just typical feminist stuff. But anyway, I was happy that she made that statement about having it all. And then this morning, I was coming to meet with you all, and I opened up my Wall Street Journal, and there she is, a year later. Just happened to be this morning. I wasn't going to bring this, but I thought, well, perfect, okay. So I read it, and there she is, Anne Marie Slaughter, the former diplomat on her new job doing business, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out she's going back to D.C., she's becoming a president of a new something or other, and she's going to be gone just at least 3 nights a week in New Jersey. In D.C. while her family's in New Jersey. So that's better than five, I guess. So she basically is undermining, in my opinion, her supposed epiphany from a year ago. And then she says in here, I think we need to change the vision of home not to be the woman's sphere, but the domestic sphere. In other words, and she's an academic, and all academics, most academics, are feminists, and they like to change the rules to sort of fit their game. And so last year, this sort of worked, you know, and she writes this article about it, and then now we're sort of undoing that whole message, even though it went viral and was huge, and we're going to send another message, a different one, and that is that the home sphere needs to be, what that means is, by the way, not a woman in domestic, that goes back to the 50-50. That I was talking about. It's just home, and someone needs to be in it, and it doesn't matter who it is. And so it's okay if I go back because, you know, my husband's here or what have you. But clearly she was making the point that her sons need their mom, not just a dad, not just a mom. So they just flat out refuse to accept reality. That's the bottom line. So you can never get anywhere with a feminist. Okay, I'm going to close with one last reading, and then I'm going to open it up to Q&A. They say alcoholics can't change until they admit they have a problem. This same approach can be applied to any conflict. Recognizing that feminism is based on faulty assumptions and arguments, and that it drives a wedge between men and women, and even among women, maybe especially among women, is the first step to recovery. Feminist journalist and author Anne Taylor Fleming issues a warning. 30 years ago, Fleming argued that if she got pregnant unexpectedly, she'd have an abortion. 20 years later, in her book, Motherhood Deferred, she wrote, "I am a woman of 40 who put career ahead of motherhood and now longs for motherhood. I belong to the sisterhood of the infertile. I am a lonesome, babyless baby boomer, now completely consumed by the longing for a baby. I'm tempted to roll down the window and shout, 'Hey, hey, Gloria, Jermaine, Kate, tell us, how does it feel to have ended up without babies? Children, was your ideology worth the empty womb?'"
When we come back on this Monday afternoon, as we listen to Suzanne Venker make the secular case against feminism, we'll hear a few more of her catalog of regrets from feminist leaders regarding their childlessness, their association with abortion, etc. We'll be right back. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues, Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're listening to Suzanne Venker make the secular case against feminism from the very first Issues, Etc., Making the Case conference before the break. She was cataloging the regrets of some feminist leaders regarding their association with childlessness. Here's another example.
Jermaine Greer, the 1970s feminist icon who encouraged women to reject motherhood, also paid the ultimate price. "I was desperate for a baby and I have the medical bills to prove it. I still have pregnancy dreams waiting for something that will never happen." But it's Rebecca Walker, daughter of committed feminist Alice Walker, who wrote The Color Purple, who was the most courageous in telling the truth about feminism in an article entitled "How My Mother's Fanatical Views Tore Us Apart." And I'm just going to read you one paragraph of what she wrote and end there. "As a child, I yearned for a traditional mother. I grew up believing that children are millstones around your neck, and the idea that motherhood can make you happy is a complete fairy tale. When I hit my 20s, I could feel my biological clock ticking, but I felt if I listened to it, I would be betraying my mother and all that she had taught me. In fact, having a child has been the most rewarding experience of my life. My only regret is that I discovered the joys of motherhood too late. I have been trying for a second child, but so far with no luck. Feminism has betrayed an entire generation of women into childlessness. But far from taking responsibility for this, the leaders of the women's movement close ranks against anyone who dares to question them, as I have learned to my cost. I believe feminism is an experiment, and all experiments need to be assessed on their results. Then, when you see huge mistakes have been paid, you need to make alterations. That's it.
Hi, my name is Kyle, and I'm from Shelbyville, Indiana. And I attend Ball State University in Muncie. And one of my professors is a feminist, declared it in her class. And one of the interesting things, she talked about her marriage and that she doesn't like the term husband and wife. She rather prefers spouse. And so this neutering of the sexes, where you don't have these roles as mother and father, it makes me not only wonder how they miss out on being women in the world, but how they might miss out on parenting their kids.
Yeah, that's awesome observation. So, and that is exactly where it begins. You said Ball State University, I think. So your first introduction for most people to feminism, if they didn't get it from their own mothers growing up, and certainly many did, baby boomer parents are very feminist type thinkers. So this generation probably got an earful from their own parents. But whether they did or not, once you go to college, it's all over. I mean, all you get is feminist junk. I mean, and it was bad even back in the 80s. So what he's pointing out is so prolific that it's just the natural college experience today for children, or for young people, excuse me. So those are some very impressionable years. And to take all that in, there's so many people who are taking that in, and once again, not feeling like they can speak up against it because that's your professor. You know, and it's spoken as though it's just word of God. This is the way that it is. So I feel for folks in universities because it's bad.
My name is Dave Myers. I'm from Oldfield, Missouri. And I am a stay-at-home dad. And it was very hard in the beginning, and it's still pretty difficult. We now have two kids, 2 years and 13 weeks. And
yep. You're in the throes of it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And one of the things that I've had to kind of grapple with, my wife is actually very supportive of this. She's supportive of, she wants to switch the roles. She's really supportive of, you know, wanting to be the mom and let me be out and be the dad and be the breadwinner. And I've had a really difficult time dealing with wanting a job that I desperately do. And I wear about four different hats. I'm in the military. I work for a company. I'm now the operations manager for that company. I work in politics. I'm a stay-at-home dad. I substitute teach. Good grief, you know. Mm-hmm. Give me a break. And I do this, and what I've realized is exactly what you were saying. What I've realized is that I have been searching for that identity ever since I became a stay-at-home dad. I have been searching for an identity that I can call my own, and I've realized that stay-at-home dad isn't that identity. However, when the thought came to me that I might have a chance to be a working dad, mm-hmm. the thought of leaving my kids was terrible. I've been gone 2 days, mm-hmm. and I miss my kids mm-hmm. horribly. All right now, you know, and so and what is your take? Two books written by the same lady. One's called For Women Only, and one's called For Men Only. It was written by Shanti Feldhahn. Thank you. They're fabulous books on the inner nature of men and the mm-hmm. inner nature of mm-hmm. women. They're mm-hmm. really great books. Mm-hmm. And what is your take on not feminism, this what I'm talking about, but in a positive working light? How a couple can make that happen as opposed to a couple warring with each other that it's happening at all?
Make what happen? Who's going to do what?
Make the role reversal.
Right. So what strikes me about what he said is this shows you that it really doesn't matter whether it's the dad or the mom who's home. The feelings and the experiences are the same. Because guess what? It wasn't about moms, per se, or women. It's about the role of taking care of these dependent creatures that takes all of you to the point where you don't have time or energy or what have you to go find yourself outside the home. That's not the time for this at the same time that you're doing this thing. It's too hard. So it doesn't matter who's doing it. So in that sense, it's not really a male or female issue. And I think the new crop of at-home dads, and it has risen, actually a lot in the last 10 years, but not hugely overall, they are, most of them, doing something else alongside it. So that's actually really common. Yes, definitely. But even might even choose to, because I do think that men naturally want to provide. I think that is in them to provide and take care of. But when you talk about women, you don't so much feel that I want to provide for a man or take care of a man. In fact, if anything, they resent taking care of a man, because that's the whole premise of feminism, is that you don't need to do that. That makes you a servant, which of course it doesn't, but that was the argument. So the natural part of being a man is to take care of, and the natural part of a woman is to be loved and be recognized and supported in what you're doing. So in your particular roles, they might switch, and that she needs to support you, and not, like I'm thinking of somebody right now for whom this woman, really big job, this guy at home, but maybe another job too, but they're like ships that pass in the night, and I think it's more of an understanding, and that there isn't really any respect for what he's doing. So it really comes, it always comes down to, what do you want? What do you value? What do you think is important? Not what the world thinks or the culture, but if you're living the life that is important to you, that you've learned yourself, you shouldn't really need those accolades, hopefully, from society to say, but you certainly need it from your spouse. You definitely need to be on the same page. And regardless of how you've set that up in terms of childcare or breadwinning, it's that constant support and respect and recognition and understanding what the other person is doing to make that work.
Hi, my name is Jenna Bakey. I'm from Rockford, Illinois. I am a stay-at-home mom of 5 children, and I homeschool. Okay. Prior to getting married, I was a United States Navy sailor for 8 years active duty. I was also sailor of the quarter. I did my job very well. I want to know your view and how you address the hot topic of women in the military on the front lines, in which I do not agree with after having served in the service for 8 years. I believe there may be a place for women in the military. I think it's behind the lines in administrative intelligence rates, but I do not believe it's on the front lines, and I want to hear your comments on that.
Do you know that I have never written a word about that? Which is really funny, because how could I not have? Although it's really becoming more front and center in the last year or two. But I agree with you. I am not an advocate of women in the military on the front lines, and I do think that there is a place for them elsewhere, and there always has been. I think at the end of my... I won't search for it because it'll take too much time, but at the end of the book that I was just reading from, I used the example of 9/11, the World Trade Center. And I was talking about all the firefighters that lost their lives, all of whom were men, 100%. And they were the ones that ran up those burning buildings to rescue the women. And I made some comment in there about, I'm certainly glad it wasn't a woman running up the stairs to rescue me, if that would have been me. Meaning, the physical makeup of men and women are such that obviously men as a whole are stronger and meant, again, to do that that protective instinct. And so it's natural for a woman, if you're going to be saved, to want, the bigger the person, the safer you are. So same thing with the front lines. I think there's a lot to that conversation that isn't just about strength, but also about what goes on behind the scenes when you have women in the same room with mostly men, or even a third and two-thirds or whatever, and how that breaks down morale. And there's a lot of details to it. I read an excellent article in the Wall Street Journal about that from somebody who was explaining the details of really what goes on and why it's really harmful to have both sexes in the same room preparing for that. I can't remember the details of it, but so those are my thoughts on that.
Suzanne Venker. That's Suzanne Venker's presentation at the 2013 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case, the secular case, against feminism. Suzanne's a married mother of two children in St. Louis. She has been a guest on numerous radio and television programs, including The View, Fox and Friends, and The Laura Ingraham Show. She's author of the books Seven Myths of Working Mothers, How to Choose a Husband and Make Peace with Marriage, and The Flip Side of Feminism. Now, I am certain that feminism will be one of the topics discussed during next month's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Journalist Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist will be making the case for the differences between men and women. Now, you can meet and hear Molly along with Dr. Paul Meyer, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, Pastor Chris Roseborough, Dr. David Menton, and Pastor Will Whedon at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 19th, and Saturday, June the 20th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. It's only about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Registration is $100. It includes meals Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. Find out more at issuesetc.org. It's the premier conference for the laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. When we come back, Pastor Paul McCain and the Sixth Commandment.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.